You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Faye. With me as always, Jack Manuel. And Jack, we just experienced an extremely painful loss to the Cavs, 116-114. How are we doing?
What is wrong with this franchise? What is wrong with these players? What is wrong with the Brooklyn Nets, Nick?
Yeah, a lot, especially in the last 2 minutes of this game. Ended on a 12-2 run in favor of the Cavs. And that final possession, Donovan Mitchell misses the potential game-tying free throw. The Nets get, three pairs of hands on the ball and still cannot grab the rebound. Isaac Okoro, somebody who I talked about on the last podcast, is a guy you'll live with shooting, hits the game-winning three, and he hit three threes tonight. A guy that averages two attempts a game at 35%. I mean, it just sucks to be a Nets fan right now. This has been probably one of the most painful seasons given. And we thought last year was bad, but this season is just kind of a continuation of disappointment. We'll jump into that and plenty more. Make sure you find the Buzz on all streaming platforms. You give us a follow on Instagram at Brooklyn Buzz Pod. But Jack, where do we go?
I don't know, mate. But like, I want to piggyback, I guess, on what you were sort of saying and what we were chatting a little bit off wax. It just feels like this game was emblematic of the Brooklyn Nets experience like the past 24 months. Like, there was glimpses and moments and promise and then idiocy and just dumbfoundery. Like, it was just like, what the hell is going on right now? Like, the Nets are losing the unlosable game. Like, that quarter, they got up by double digits for the first time in the entire game. And they, Joe Harris hit his 1,003. All was going great. Mikal was hitting scoop layups. Spencer Dinwiddie was taking Evan Mobley off the dribble. I'm like, okay, that's the game right there. And to maybe I jinxed us, because what I like to do is, Nick, and put people behind the scenes, is like a celebratory tweet. I do a little bit of dot points. I saved that in my draft, so I've got it ready to tweet out when the Nets are going to win. And then I'm just like, wait, turnover, free throws. Like, what is going on here? Like, it was just, you could not write a more nonsensical script if you were a crappy Netflix writer. Like, what was going on there, mate? Like, those turnovers, and like, the Nets had a timeout, I believe. Am I wrong in saying that? Like,
yeah, they had a timeout on the possession before the Cavs got the ball back, you know, and I mean, Spencer was trapped. I think what is even more frustrating, the Nets didn't seem like they were prepared to be trapped in a situation that it was quite obvious that's what the Cavs were going to do if they weren't able to kind of, you know, play defense for the final possession, which they weren't. And the Nets looked unprepared. And DFS makes a tough pass to Mikal Bridges that goes off his hands, ends up getting the Cavs in transition. But it's not even just that play. It's the, you know, not the possession before that, but the two prior possessions before the Spencer Dinwiddie layup. You have Dinwiddie making a bad turnover, and then you have Mikal Bridges making a really bad turnover. And two guys who had awesome games, probably their two best games, you know, their best games they've had in like a week, and they finished it off by blowing the game. It's as painful as it gets. I mean, as we talked about a little bit too, is like, the Nets brought you back in for potentially this season in terms of like, oh, maybe they can make the playoffs. Maybe they aren't a terrible team. Well, tonight, I think this kind of closes the door in the season. Not to say they can't make the playoffs, but I think the fans, for the most part, are ready for this one to be over just for how painful it's been on so many different levels.
Yeah, 73 games of agony. Like, yeah. Look, there's been elation.
It was like 50 games of like hope of being a contender with two superstars, and they're finally together. Then Kyrie demands a trade. Kevin Durant's traded. Then we get this new team, looks pretty good, 5-game losing streak, and now we're back in the dumps.
Yeah, it feels like Brooklyn Nets fans all around the world should get free mental health care. Like, just because, like, for the amount of the emotional roller coaster that we've been put through. And I think tonight, Nick, you know, it was interesting because I know you responded to my tweet in the morning that I put out about, like, feeling. Yeah, look, I thought it was quite measured. And it was like, yeah, actually, I kind of feel the sort of same way because you sort of bring a semblance of just like rationality to things that just helps me understand my own thoughts. And I'm just like, and I said this to you behind the scenes that I haven't necessarily said on the pod, I've been leaning towards more the Nets getting out of the play-in and getting a better pick in what is said to be a stacked draft class that you and I are starting to do a little bit of research on. But then we get these glimpses during the game where, like, the Cavs are a legitimately good team. Like, they're a fringe championship contender and they have incredible defensive players, some incredible offensive players. Like, I really rate the Cleveland Cavaliers. But in saying that, like, it's just what happened for the Nets throughout this game was just like, they shot poorly, but then they rebounded well. You know, Spencer drove and then he turned it over. It's just like the good and the bad, the yin and the yang is just what was represented throughout this game. And it's a really tough bitter pill to swallow. And now I was leaning more towards, you know, the tank. I think most Nets fans will probably feel that way now if they're looking at it objectively, because, you know, there was talk about, you know, the Knicks dropping a few games here and there, the Heat are coming up. It's just like, what is the purpose now of being like a mediocre fringe play-in team? There is no like ultimate goal, and what is the best that you're going to get out of that? The best that you could get out of, you know, dropping a couple of few spots could be, you know, a franchise impacting player, not franchise altering. I don't doubt that a top 10 pick could do that. Donovan Mitchell certainly has, but in saying that, I just think that this game further reiterates my feelings before. You know, I was conflicted. Now I'm much less conflicted about the direction the Nets should take in these final 9 games. And it sucks because I think both of us felt that there was some of these games had a little bit more meaning, had a little bit more oomph and juice to them. And it's just like, the Nets are throwing them away. Like, this is now 5 straight, and the Nets haven't lost 5 straight all season. And during those stretches, some of those games were very, very winnable. The Kings, the Nuggets, tonight's game. It's just like, the Nets could have gone 3-2 and be in a position where, you know, they're knocking on the door of the 5 seed. And it's just, it's hard to comprehend and it's hard to verbalize at the same time, Nick, where the Nets do currently stand.
Yeah, they would be the 5 seed, I think, if they went, you know, 3-2 in that stretch. And they'd have probably a matchup with Cleveland in the first round. And you would think, you know, if they won this game, oh, maybe that can be a competitive series. But I don't think anyone really wants to see the Nets go to the playoffs and get cooked for 4 games, because that's what's going to happen at this point in time. You have no level of confidence that they could win a postseason game. And, you know, arguably two of, you know, their top 3 players played really well tonight. You know, Spencer Dinwiddie, Mikal Bridges, Nick Claxton all had impact on the game in a substantial way. Obviously, that final stretch was bad pretty much from all 3. You know, Spencer had a turnover, Mikal had a turnover, Claxton couldn't grab that final rebound. Some of that's Royce O'Neal and him both trying to fight for it at the same time rather than letting, you know, your teammate get it. But it's tough. I mean, it's just, there's not a ton of excitement. It's just a lot of disappointment and just looking to the offseason and looking to next season right now because of just what it's been like watching this team for really the last 5 games. But overall, you were kind of trying to gauge this group, you know, post All-Star break, post trade deadline, and see, you know, what they could be. And I think we've seen enough to understand who they are. And it's just not a good basketball team.
No, not. And they're an average basketball team that can show you something. Like, and like, they have guys who can show you something, you know, and to varying degrees. Like, Daron Sharpe the last couple of games, like, I know you covered it pretty well on that solo pod, but tonight that block on Evan Mobley was absolutely phenomenal. And like, his defense has been really positive. You know, Yuta Watanabe being back in the rotation. So there's just all of these things where it's just like, the Nets should be a good team on paper. They should be that frisky team. They've got every single switch defender that you sort of want, but then, you know, none of those guys are hitting threes, or none of those guys are making the right decisions when the ball is in their hands. They don't have to play defense. You know, I'm looking at you, DFS. Cam Johnson, I can't remember the last time he had a pretty consistent stretch from 3. So, look, this one's more frustrating, I think, to the extent, Nick, that when we've been podcasting, we've sort of said, well, if the Nets guys were just good enough and they were led by Spencer and Mikhail, and those guys were at least like the level that we expect from them, the Nets get this win. The thing is, they did that for 95% of this game, but the 5% that mattered, the Cavs really punished the Nets, and they deserve to get punished. You know, this is a Cleveland Cavaliers team, as I alluded to, that is a very good team. You can do this maybe against the Detroit Pistons, Orlando Magic, or whoever else you want to throw in there. You can't do that to the Cleveland Cavaliers. They are going to punish your mistakes, and they punished us big time. We deserve that L.
Yeah, we did. I mean, the Nets lost this game. The Cavs didn't win this game. The Nets blew it. Like, you have 3 turnovers in the last 2 minutes of the game. You deserve to lose, especially in the nature of the turnovers. It wasn't like, you know, guys are getting clamped up and, you know, Evan Mobley's like tightening so hard that, you know, he's poking the ball out of your hands or you're getting rejected at the rim or something. It's just bad basketball decisions. And I think it's just really frustrating. That's really just the overall theme of this Nets, this current roster and the overall season of the Nets. There's just no other way to put it. And it just gotten to this point of so much excitement to now just being like, oh, here's another Nets game.
Yeah, like it was funny. Like the Nets had something like 10 turnovers in the fourth. And then by the end of it, they had like 16. Like it's just, I think it's hard to sort of individually analyze a lot of these guys because of the overriding emotions and frustration of the overall Nets experience the last 20 games, the last 50 games, the last 24 goddamn months. But
and then the fact they're just thrown together, you know, at the trade deadline. You know, this isn't a group that had a training camp or an entire season to kind of gel.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, look, should we get into the game as much as we can?
Yeah.
I think what's the struggle here is looking at like the general team stats. The Nets shot better from the field. They shot slightly worse from three by like 1%. They had more free throws and they hit more of them. They shot better from the free throw line. They had more rebounds. They had the same amount of assists. It was the turnovers at the end. They had less points in the paint, but you know, I think that when you got Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, that's fair enough. But they just did so many things right. Like if you're looking at the box score and you didn't know what the score was overall, you'd think that the Nets would have got this one semi-comfortably, and they should have got it semi-comfortably. It's just that the mistakes were so damn pronounced.
And at the worst times, really, that's it. Like they, like you mentioned, they played really well for 95, probably even 98% of the game. It just came down to the final stretch where they just couldn't get it done and they couldn't execute. And ultimately, that's what led to the loss. And some of that is player execution. I think there was also a couple of questionable coaching decisions. You know, final possession, you need to get a game-clinching rebound. You don't have arguably, you know, easily probably your best rebounder in De'Ron Sharpe in the game. I'm not really sure why he's not in there. And like I mentioned before, the team wasn't prepared to be trapped. Like, they weren't even set up in a position to have outlets for Spencer Dinwiddie. And there was, you know, a timeout previously. So I just don't understand some of the decisions from the coaching staff. And then also, obviously, the execution of the players with the turnovers. It's just stuff that you don't expect from an NBA level basketball team that's pretty good, you know, was good for this game. And as you mentioned, is average, but has it been good at times?
Yeah, there's like a couple of mistakes are like, you know, an aberration. You put it behind you. But when it comes to consistent mistakes, it's a trend. And it has been a trend for this Nets team to make mistakes at the worst times. And maybe I'm getting in my head a little bit, but like, it just feels like that's been the case. But as well in saying that, Nick, because you look at the fact that Donovan Mitchell missed that free throw and he got two putbacks of his own.
Yeah.
So like, he had two shots where he could have beaten the Nets by himself anyway, or tied it up.
I thought first putback was going to be good, to be honest.
I thought both of them were good. I'm like, okay, we're done here. We're going to OT and maybe the Nets can reestablish themselves. But then he misses both. And thankfully he did for the Cavs' sake, but not for the Nets' sake. And the Nets still couldn't return, as you alluded to, you know, Claxton and Royce fighting for it. I don't mind that, you know, but not to allow Donovan Mitchell to get two putbacks in a row. That's what all that frustrates me as much as the loss, Nick. Well, not as much as the loss, but I think in the overall scheme of things, in terms of the turnovers and stuff, yeah, they're frustrating. You know, Mikal's hands were like as slippery as hell. He's like sweaty, like mum spaghetti. But in saying that, it's just, there was just way, way too many mistakes. And Mikal was great tonight. Spencer was great tonight. You know, Joe was awesome tonight. And I thought Royce was positive tonight. Klax had his positive moments too. But, you know, this sucks because we sort of thought, like, you know, we could have got these wins if the Nets did these things. They had their guys playing well, but it's just, we're maybe repeating ourselves a little bit too much here, but it's that frustrating. It deserves repetition.
Yeah, I think, and then it's just two straight losses to the Cavs. And I think that kind of signals even more. And in a game where the Nets outplayed them, they weren't able to kind of finish the game and get the win. They allowed Cleveland to steal it. But I guess, Jack, you want to jump into the individual players?
Yeah, I reckon we start with Mikal and Spencer as a duo, Nick, because it was really positive to see both our one and two, you know, best players, the leaders on the team, both play well. Spencer, 42 minutes for him tonight, 9 of 15 from the field, 2 of 4 from 3, 5 of 6 from the free throw line. This had the 12 assists as well, also the 4 boards, only the 2 turnovers, had a steal, plus 9 in the night, led the team in that department as a starter. You know, Utah was plus 12 off the bench. But I thought Spencer was his best game since coming back to the Black and White.
Yeah, 25 points, like you said, 12 assists, 9 of 15, only had the 2 turnovers. One obviously was super crucial, but he did a lot in this game. I think, you know, in playing 42 minutes is huge. I think defensively, I'd like him to be a little better at times, but his overall decision-making for 99% of the time offensively was really good. I thought he had probably the best balance he's had since rejoining the team of when to attack and when to pass. And I think some of that too was some of the lineups he shared the floor with. You know, there were some lineups where he was obviously the guy that needed to carry the offense, and he did that.
Yeah, and I think the Nets had good spacing out there for him, allowing him to attack. And, you know, his handle, his timing, his, you know, ability to, like, you know, oh, can I attack here? That finish, like, at 114-110 over Mobley off the glass was wonderful. Yep. That was an insane finish. And the timing and the dexterity there and just the read on, just, like, it was just really, really good basketball from Spencer Dinwiddie. And, look, he's been doing the podcast tour. He's been speaking to Taylor Rooks, speaking to Glue Guys. You know, maybe, you know, next week he's got to chat to us so he can continue that positive vein of form. But, you know, ultimately it was really good to see Spencer find his form because, you know, we know the potential that he does have. And this is what he can do. How consistently can he do this for the team going forward, whether that's for the remaining 9 games or the season beyond that, remains to be seen. But, you know, this performance, you know, other than, you know, the couple of turnovers and the timely sort of possessions there, it was a wonderful game from Spencer Dinwiddie.
Yeah, and I think he's developing a really nice chemistry with De'Ron Sharpe. I think they're kind of light years ahead of where Dinwiddie and Clax are, you know, and you saw that with that, you know, late turnover in the game. You know, I think they just aren't finding a great connection. The oops are a little bit off, and that's kind of been an issue. But like you said, he did a lot of really good things. That finish, like you mentioned, over Mobley was awesome and really tough. And even when he was able to just kind of like cook Jared Allen a couple times, you know, get some work on his former teammate, Dinwiddie, this is, you know, the best version of Spencer Dinwiddie other than that late game turnover.
Yeah, you alluded to the chemistry with King Sharp. I think he just, Damon Sharp is a more traditional big man. And I think that, you know, a guy that's just strong screener, strong finisher around the rim, and those sort of things, whereas Clax doesn't necessarily fit that prototypical sort of mold. So, you know, he's issues with DeAndre Jordan, who is, you know, obviously probably the epitome of a prototype of an old school modern center. But it just feels like, you know, there's just guys you have chemistry with. There's just guys that, you know, where it's a little bit trickier to sort of find that sort of form with. But yeah, I think hopefully they do find it because they're two of our three best players. But in speaking of that, let's get to our other best players tonight, Nick. That was Mikal Bridges, 11 of 19 from the field, only 2 of 7 from 3, but again getting to the free throw line, hitting all 8 of his free throws, 6 boards, had the assists, did only have the 1 turnover, was minus 14 on the night, but did have the 32 points. So I thought, look, it was good to see Mikal bounce back, you know, to getting, you know, that scoop layup at the end, the release on it, the speed and fluidity on it was just like, damn, like that's just like, he has that in his bag. I like it.
Yeah, that was a really good finish. He did a great job of using the rim to kind of protect himself from being blocked. And, you know, that's the next level we talked about. You know, really happy with mid-range game. He was awesome from the mid-range this game, even the short range. You know, getting that layup package to the next level is going to be huge this summer. I think a lot of that, as we've talked about, is building up that core strength and lower body strength. You know, he does get knocked off his spots a little bit offensively and defensively. Three ball still a little bit off, but he did have one really sweet three in this game where he had a crossover, I think, on Donovan Mitchell and then just pulled up from the three-point line. That was super smooth. You know, it's nice to see him bounce back and really score in an effortless way. But again, same thing as Spencer, I'll keep bringing it up. The late game turnover is going to always kind of give you a sour mark on the game because of how crucial it was. And his turnover directly led to Caris LeVert, I believe, getting free throws.
Yeah, it's really annoying, but you know, that's just the nature of the beast, Nick. Do we get to Clax next? Do we get to Joe Harris and his 1,003-pointer and that insane 9-point run in 12-point fourth quarter? Who do you want to jump into next?
Yeah, let's jump into Clax. I think Clax is just underappreciated by Nets fans to an extent because of what he can do defensively. Like, he clamped up Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell majority of the time when he got switched onto him. Like, good defenders. Mikal Bridges was cooked by those guys multiple times in the last two games, and Clax was able to lock them up tonight for the most part. Mitchell obviously hit a big jumper late in this game, but he's just so good defensively, and he still provides you elite rim protection, and is just a very active player on the end of the floor. I mean, I just truly enjoy watching Nicholas Claxton play defense.
He is a defensive dynamo. You know, you could watch defensive highlights. Like, there's a 56-minute YouTube video on Austin Reeves highlights. I'm like, let's get, like, maybe we need to get together with Blue Wire and get a 56-minute defensive highlight package on Nick Claxton. You could probably get that from, like, his past four games. But in saying that, 11 points, 9 rebounds, 3 of them offensive, 3 or 4 from the free throw line, 4 or 10 from the field, which is obviously lesser to his standards. He did have the 3 blocks, the 1 steal, and the 2 assists. I think... And some people got in my mentions saying like Bam Adebayo or whatever, but Nick Claxton has been clearly the best switch defender in the NBA as a big man this year. I think Bam's probably better overall. And I had this discussion, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I think, with Matt Brooks, but I think Nick Claxton has had easily the best switch defender season. I think he's starting to somewhat get a little bit of credit in that Defensive Player of the Year race. I still think he belongs in the top two, top three conversation at the very least. I think I've biased towards Clax City. I just think that in terms of his versatility, as you alluded to, how many guys that are 6'10" and above can do what he does? Like Giannis, Bam, and maybe to a lesser extent, AD. You know, I don't think he's been that great defensively this year, but he's just a wonderful, wonderful player. And defensively, he is a beast. And he looks goddamn good in that seafoam headband.
Yeah, I think with Clax, in terms of the comparison to Bam, I think he's a better rim protector, but I think Bam defends centers better. You know, he has more size and girth to defend in the post, where at times it feels like Clax is almost better on perimeter guys. And that also kind of gets to the point where the Nets were so obsessed with trapping. It's like you have all these great switch defenders why are you not leaning into switching? You know, we saw that change a little bit as the game progressed. And I think they just don't really have a level of cohesion or a great feel for what's the best play for this team. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, some of that's just for the team being thrown together, you know, trade deadline time and not having, you know, a solidified identity.
Yeah, it's weird. With the bench unit, we saw some pretty seamless switching with Utah and Dayron and stuff, and that allowed Dayron to help on that incredible block that he had on Evan Mobley. So I think that switching does fit well. You know, I've had my concerns about Dayron Sharpe and his defense, especially on the switch, but you know, he said it coming into to the draft and coming into to the Nets that, you know, it's something that he can do, and I think we've seen real glimpses and real moments from him at a really positive sign. But in saying that, yeah, I think that some of that's coaching, some of that's on player executions. It's a combination of both.
Yeah, and some of it's just no chemistry or cohesion. You know, some of that you just see guys looking at each other after the Evan Mobley had his third wide open dunk of the game, and you're just like, oh, well, you know, that just happened for two games in a row. It's just, I think it's just kind of frustrating when it's like repeated mistakes.
Yeah, and the Nets have had plenty of those of late and had plenty of that during this game.
Yeah, I guess getting to Joe Harris, like you mentioned, had that single, you know, 9-0 run for himself in the fourth. I thought also, you know, I've given Vaughn some trouble for some of the moves he made. I thought that was a smart move to leave Joe Harris in a good chunk of that fourth quarter and let him hit some big shots. Obviously, I would have pulled him out for that final rebounding possession. But, you know, Joe, nice to see him hit, you know, a milestone in his career and also play some good basketball.
Yeah, I think the nature of those threes as well, Nick, is like you watch all of them. All of them had like a unique, you know, there was one where he shot it over, you know, Evan Mobley. There was one where it was like a sort of scramble possession. The pass wasn't perfect. Joe had to jump up to get it and then, you know, reset himself. And I'm like, in my heart, like, you know, a guy that's been a Joe Harris stan in the past, I'm like, I think all of these are going to go in. Like, his three-point shooting is something, despite the issues with his ankle and his defense this year, his three-point shooting is still, you know, elite of the elite. And it was really on display tonight. And when the Nets needed to generate some of those looks, you know, and they were just like moving the ball around, there was some good ball movement with the second unit with Joe Harris and Spencer leading the sort of way there. This was a really great game from Joe Harris. And I think it would have been, even we would have been talking about this maybe more at the start of the pod if the Nets had got this win. You know, we would have spoken him alongside, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie in his game, Bridges in his game, Claxton in his game. But, you know, Joe was wonderful and a great milestone to hit his 1,003 in his career. And, you know, he was lights out. And Joe Harris has been lights out ever since he's been a Brooklyn Net.
Yeah, I mean, he just looked more natural shooting his threes. It just like his shoulders look squared. He got a nice, you know, release on it. He just was kind of going straight up, almost a little springier than he's been in the past.
Yeah, like especially that last one that I was sort of alluded to where the pass was off and he had to reset himself and he had to like sort of bounce up a little bit and sort of like actually sort of jump a little bit, because Joe doesn't really, he's not Cam Thomas in his sort of like three-point shooting where Cam just like jumps up straight up in the air and a little bit, but Joe is just, his form and all of those shots were just like absolute, like the rim
fundamentally barely, sound
like the net like barely moved. It was just like he's gorgeous to watch. It's like Klay Thompson, some of those, like, you know, 3-point specialists, they're just fun to watch in a similar way what you were sort of alluding to with Claxton's defense. Well, I could have some of these guys in a team. It just sucks that, you know, we're not, you know, they're not getting the rewards for the stuff that they're putting in. There's just, it's just a bit shitty.
Yeah, I mean, bad late decisions, other guys not playing well. Obviously, Cam Johnson and Dorian Finney-Smith offensively in this game provided very, very little. Didn't see big minutes either. Those two guys were looked to be big pieces of this current Nets roster moving in for the final stretch. And, you know, their play, I think, has been disappointing.
Look, Dorian Finney-Smith struggling is maybe makes my grading of him, you know, somewhat off. But I think his defense is okay, just that, like, he can't hit a three, man. Like, he hits, like, a maybe, like, he makes Royce O'Neal look like Joe Harris. Like, it's crazy
feels
how...
Feels like all of his threes have come in three games.
Yeah, like, the it feels like one game. Like, they all came in that Boston game. And, like, I can't remember the other time he's actually hit
Denver,
a three.
He hit some big threes. And I want to say in that Atlanta game, he hit a couple threes. But they're the only ones that really I recall. You know, every time he pulls up, I mean, not to be mean, and I wanted Dorian Finney-Smith to be good. He was really hyped up by Mavs fan. It just feels like it's going to be a miss, and it feels like it's going to be a brick. It just doesn't really, you don't have much confidence. And offensively, teams are really starting, defensively, teams are really starting to sag off of him.
Yeah, if like Isaac Okoro is making you look, you know, like a shitty three-point shooter, that's saying something for DFS. But, you know, we don't want to pile on him. You know, I think Cam Johnson as well, he's making his contract look a little bit nicer for the Nets if they want to sign him in the offseason. So I don't really care if Cam's struggling a little bit because I think his best is still to come, and an offseason with the team will find that DFS. If he's a Brooklyn Net long-term, that remains to be seen. But if the Nets can
get... I think his trade value probably took a hit so far with the trade so far. You know, the Nets, obviously, there was reports that they could have gotten a first for Dorian Finney-Smith at the deadline. Right now, it seems like they should have pulled the trigger on that. He'd probably be a better fit on that team. And also, it doesn't seem likely the Nets will get a first for him this offseason.
Yeah, it's funny because like I'm like, well, DFS is clearly going to be more valuable than Royce for the rest of the season. But I think Royce O'Neal has played much, much better basketball. And that's a credit to him, and including tonight.
Yeah, I mean, Royce has really stepped up, and it happened probably about 2 or 3 weeks ago. He just really found his role coming off the bench and understanding what he could do and doing those little things. And I think at times he benefits because he's going against second units. You know, he obviously he plays some minutes against starters, but he's not necessarily an elite ball handler by any measure. So going against lesser defenders in those second units, I think allow him to utilize more of his game. And he also had a couple nice finishes in this one.
Yeah, that three that was just like a rainbow on top of a rainbow on top of a rainbow.
That was deep, too.
That was deep as hell. That was wonderful. And, you know, he had the 30 minutes tonight for 4 of 8 from the field, 2 of 4 from three, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal. He seems to take the matchup against, you know, Donovan Mitchell quite personally, which is, you know, something that I do enjoy. But obviously, you know, there's Caris LeVert and Jared Allen on the other side of things, too. But, you know, 30 minutes for him, you know, it was only Spencer, Clax, and McHale that had more minutes than him. And, you know, he's proven himself. Maybe, like, you know, throw him into the starters and reward him for what he's been doing. You know, maybe throw Joe into the starters and send DFS and Cam to the bench, see if they can do something, get a bit of confidence and get the against the other guys. I think that I want to see a bit more maybe experimentation to end this season. The games don't matter. I think that what we get out of those games is what's going to matter. You know, growth from Cam, you know, Joe continuing to find his footing, a bit more minutes for Utah and Dayron Sharp. Let's see what we can find from this team. And there's other little wrinkles here and there. But look, Royce O'Neal deserves a heap of credit because we had our issues with him throughout the year. But I think his tenure as a Brooklyn Net since entering has been, you know, sensational.
Yeah, I mean, he could probably get the Nets a first-round pick back in the offseason. You know, obviously that's what they traded for him. And I think, you know, we're not going to necessarily jump into our offseason opinions right now. There'll be plenty of time for that. But the way that the last 5 games have gone, I think you're looking to probably reset this team a little bit more than what you anticipated. And maybe they can still go a competitive route, but there's just a lot of issues with this roster.
Finishing with Utah and Dayron, Nick, I just still scratch my head at how Utah was relegated from the rotation for so damn long. Like, it's just like, it's puzzling. And I'm not saying that like some of those losses that, you know, hurt a little bit and were narrow losses, and if you give Utah some minutes here and there would have changed the result, but I'm not saying that either. It's just, you give the guy 15 minutes out there and he's going to give you something. He's going to, whether it's hit a three, whether it's run the floor, whether it's get a steal, whether it's get a rebound, whether it's have a timely assist. He fits well. He just fits. He's just a guy that just does the right things at the right time for more often than not. And the Nets needed that for longer stretches tonight. So look, I'm a Utah Watanabe stan, so I'm always going to probably be high on what he brings to the team, but yeah, love what he brought tonight in those 13 minutes, and the same for Dayron, too.
Yeah, the 2 assists he had were on Joe Harris threes in the fourth quarter. So that's important. I think Utah is a connector, and he just does some of the good things out there. You know, not necessarily the most skilled player, but he plays with good energy, and I think these 14 minutes he played, that's a good role for him. And like you said, I don't know why he wasn't getting minutes. Now all of a sudden he's back in the rotation. It's just kind of strange. And Vaughn talked about, I think, post-game after the first Cavs matchup, saying, you know, we're going to experiment and try to figure some things out with this rotation. It's like, why weren't you doing that the 2 weeks after the trade deadline? You know, why wasn't that the idea to mess with things a lot during that time and then have, you know, a solidified rotation for the next 10 games going to the final stretch and potentially into the postseason? So obviously, you know, Vaughn, he coached well for a good chunk of the early season. A lot of that obviously is having Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving behind you. Right now, I think there's been more than a handful of questionable decisions, and some of that's mixed with the roster. Some of that's mixed with bad results from the players. Right now, it's just a lot of negativity going around. But going back to something positive, De'Ron Sharpe.
Can I piggyback on the Jacques Vaughn stuff, Nick, before you jump on to De'Ron Sharpe? I think it's a discussion that I really want to have in the offseason and really dive deep into, because I put out, like, you know, on Twitter, like, where does Jacques Vaughn rank as a head coach? And you asked that question at the start of the year. You know, he's in the coach of the year race, you know, with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving leading things alongside the Nets. Now we're sort of seeing, you know, the coach that he is. He's an average coach. You know, if anyone thinks... And there are people in my reply saying that he's like a top 10 coach. I'm like, really? Like, do you know, like, NBA basketball outside of the Brooklyn Nets? Do you have that much of an irrational bias? I just think that he's an average coach. Like, he can do some good stuff. He can do some bad stuff. And, you know, the extension is, again, a discussion we can have longer in the offseason. I just wanted to throw that in there and just, like, piggyback on what you were sort of saying, that, you know, there's good, there's bad, and Jacques Vaughn is essentially, you know, the face of what the Nets are right now. They're good, they're bad, they're average.
Yeah, and I think this offseason will be a big test for him. You know, the team will implement whatever he wants to run offensively and defensively. And, you know, obviously, I'm not saying it's an excuse, but obviously part of the reason is, you know, changing the team and changing the roster. And as I mentioned, you know, Sean Marks giving him somewhat of an incomplete roster. De'Ron Sharpe obviously stepped up in that backup center role the last two games. I thought he's probably played, you know, his eight best quarters, maybe consecutively as a pro. You know, there were some issues in the third and the fourth, but during that first and second quarter, he's really good. And then obviously in that first Cavs game, showcased some really good stuff. So happy to see Sharpe progress. And as someone who hasn't necessarily believed in his game, maybe, you know, he can take strides forward and really be a rotational NBA big.
Yeah, I think there's signs there, you know, when it comes to De'Ron Sharpe. And, you know, you look at, when it comes to big men, the intangible things, you don't look at the box score. And we know De'Ron Sharpe is the best rebounder on this team. So I think I don't really need to see, like, you know, him get 14 offensive rebounds, because I know he can do that. It's what he can do on a switch. It's what he can do, you know, as part of a team scheme. Can he lead? Can he be that foundation as the big man on Nets defense? And in the past two games, as you've alluded to, Nick, he has done that. So full kudos to King Sharpe. You know, Sean Marks knows how to draft these centers. And I think that having, you know, him, you know, on the team, you know, who knows what could happen in the offseason. You know, the third season sort of bounce. We saw Clax, you know, show some real glimpses and some real growth. Who knows if we see that from De'Ron Sharpe, but I'm not going to rule it out.
Yeah, I mean, I think even if you go into next season and he's your third big, you feel pretty good that there'll be progress made. You know, maybe he makes a big enough jump that he could truly be the backup center next year. Obviously, that was kind of the plan this year. We all thought that was kind of a little rash, and it turned out to be the case, just given the Nets didn't give him enough time to develop in season one. But, you know, at least there's, you know, some promise and some positivity from the young guys, and, you know, one of them's at least getting to play.
Yeah, exactly. Any final thoughts, Nick?
Not really, Jack. Happy to be done with this recap. this has been a painful game, a painful stretch. And, you know, knowing the Nets, they'll probably end up winning Saturday against the Heat just to pull us back in a little bit more. But who really knows what's going to go on with this team? Any final thoughts from you, Jack?
Yeah, like, knowing what's going to happen with this Brooklyn Nets team is like predicting the weather in Melbourne. Like, it's for those who have been playing along at home, like, Melbourne was stormy as hell yesterday morning and then turned up to being sunshine and 25 degrees Celsius. So predicting what the Nets are going to do, how the Nets are going to perform. Look, I think we can rely on Mikal Bridges and Spencer Dinwiddie, but let's just see where it goes. I've always preached enjoying the journey. It's been made somewhat difficult by what the team and the front office and coaching and ownership have been doing and inflicting upon us. But I still love the Nets, but I love them more when we win, and I love them a little bit less when we lose.
Yeah, it's irrational love at this point. Obviously, we're not giving back the love, especially with the results on the court. But Jack, always a pleasure. Big thanks to everybody listening. Check the Buzz on all stream platforms.